ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And throughout the week on the podcast, I'm joined by the brightest political minds at the ABC to wade through the political spin and bring you the analysis you need to know. We go beyond the headlines, digging into the key political stories of the day and making sure we have a little bit of fun along the way. I don't think it's an aberration. I don't think it's just temporary. I think politics is being smashed, and anyone who thinks that it's just a passing thing is completely deluded.
Delulu, you reckon?
Delulu. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. G'day, Matt Bevan here. This is If You're Listening. In Thursday's episode, we talked about Albania's very strange media environment during the Cold War under the Stalinist dictator Enver Hoxha, which led to generations of Albanians learning Italian from watching Italian TV broadcasts they picked up on giant, wobbly, homemade aerials. Basically, Albania wasn't producing any entertainment programming whatsoever, so if they wanted to be entertained with their TVs, they needed to pick up Italian broadcasts. The Italians had no idea they were doing this. Today, we're talking about a man who was, without knowing it, one of the most famous people in Albania, and how attempts by governments to control the media consumed by their citizens can have unexpected consequences. I do not know this story. Adair Shepherd does. She's our producer, and she's here to tell me. G'day, Adair.
Hello. I also found out when we were talking about this episode that we have an unexpectedly high viewership in the Philippines.
Yeah, particularly on YouTube. YouTube is particularly good at finding us new audiences in other countries. Often we find that when we talk about a particular country, a lot of people in that country will watch our episode, you know. We did an episode about Canada and a lot of Canadians watched it.
Yeah.
We also did an episode about Solomon Islands and from what I can tell, I think every single person in the Solomon Islands must have watched that episode. But people in the Philippines seem to watch us no matter what we're talking about, whether we're talking about them or not.
Hopefully we crack the Albanian market with this one. So this story starts in Tirana in 2001.
So Tirana, that's the capital of Albania.
The capital of Albania. In 2001, with a training session ahead of two England versus Albania qualifying matches for the men's FIFA World Cup.
Right.
Can you identify the two people in this video?
All right, that's David Beckham. I can identify him.
Yeah. Do you know who the other person is?
The older man?
Yeah.
No, I don't know that man, no.
Okay. In 2001, Beckham was the captain of the England team. He had just married Posh Spice. It was pretty peak fame. He was a massive deal.
Yeah.
But apparently, when they walked out onto the pitch, that man, who was 80 years old, he drew massive applause from the audience and a far larger reaction than Beckham did.
Than Beckham?
Yes. He's a comedian called Norman Wisdom. Do you know who that is?
I've never heard of this man, no.
Well, could you describe that picture?
He looks like he's having an incredible time.
Yes.
He's very excited.
He always does look like that.
He is wearing a jersey that appears to be the Albanian national team's jersey and the England national team's jersey sewn together.
Yes. So he is actually 86 in this photo, and he went to these qualifying matches. It was only the second time he'd ever been in Albania, but he still wore the half-half jersey because he is a massive cult figure in Albania.
David Wisdom.
Norman Wisdom.
Norman, I don't even remember his name. Norman Wisdom, okay.
And when he walked out onto the pitch, he tripped over and apparently the crowd absolutely erupted.
He tripped over?
Yes.
Did he trip over because he actually tripped over, or did he trip over because that's a thing that he does?
Yeah, you've got it.
Okay.
Yeah. He is a slapstick comedian.
Okay. An octogenarian slapstick comedian hamming it up at a football game. Okay.
Yes. He was from England.
Right.
And in the 1950s, he was a pretty big deal. Like, he made 19 films. Charlie Chaplin, according to the BBC, said he was his favourite clown.
Clown's clown.
A clown's clown, exactly. And he had this character called Norman Pitkin, who was like kind of a hapless underdog who would always be pissing off his boss, Mr. Grimsdale. You know, very classic British slapstick comedy. He would always be playing this character, and they would be in different scenarios. Like, there's one where he's, like, running a shop. There's one where he's a window cleaner. There's one where he's in the army, or he's a policeman.
Okay.
So it was quite hard to find a clip that was good for audio.
Yeah, yeah. Slapstick comedy. Not great on podcasts, but let's have a look. All right, we've got a trailer for something called On the Beat.
Yes. He's playing this character, Pitkin, who's impersonating like a kind of posh bad guy, Napolitani. And then he's also playing Napolitani, and they're confronting each other in this clip.
See the rigorous, riotous training that makes Norman into the undercover agent who impersonates the elegant Napolitani.
I am Police Constable Pitkin of Scotland Yard, and I warn you that anything you say will be taken down and used in evidence.
Shut your mouth.
I slit your throat from ear to ear. I feel it's only fair to warn you that to slit a policeman's throat from ear to ear, definitely illegal.
All right, very expressive. He's doing an Italian accent. Classic British comedy from the 50s. Very Tony Hancock.
His peak in the UK was like 1950s and 60s. But like by the kind of end of the 60s, he had a couple flops. And then in the 80s and 90s, he was kind of just doing guest spots.
He would have been 60.
Yes.
I mean, he would have been 60, 70, you know.
Exactly.
He was semi-retired.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
In 1995, he was 80 and his agent got a phone call from a businessman who'd been working in the newly opened Albania, which had opened up in 1991.
Yes.
And he said he was going to arrange an all-expenses-paid trip to Albania.
Okay.
Then when he landed in Albania, he stepped off the plane. A massive cheering crowd was waiting for him. And his agent compared his reception to Beatlemania.
Okay.
And he was crowded in the streets. Men and women would come up and kiss him. He had like a four-day tour where he met the president. He was made an honorary citizen.
Okay. Why? Yeah. I mean, he seems fine. But, you know, I feel like a fair few comedians of that era would have played pretty well anywhere.
Yes, exactly. It's all to do with this unique media environment that we discussed in the episode under Hoxha. Do you want to, like, recap what you learned researching it?
Yeah, so basically Enver Hoxha was the Albanian dictator from 1944 until his death in 1985, so more than four decades in power. Mm. And he was an extremist, a communist extremist, really. Mm. He kind of looked at other communists like Mao Zedong and Nikita Khrushchev as, you know, liberal traitors to the communist cause, allowing too much modernity into the communist system. Anybody who thinks Mao is too liberal is really something.
Yeah.
He, at various points, attempted to make connections with these other communist states, but always found that they weren't communist enough for him and so would cut off ties with them. And so Albania was isolated, really isolated, even among communist states for most of those 40 years. And he was really of the opinion that any kind of entertainment was not true to the communist ideals. And in the Soviet Union, they recognized the need for entertainment. Now, they wouldn't necessarily allow sort of capitalist Western entertainment in, but they would, you know, make entertainment of their own. They'd have variety shows on TV. They'd have dancing. They'd have talent contests and all that kind of thing. Whereas Hoxha said, absolutely not. You know, it is dour. Classical music is about as interesting as it can get. And propaganda for the entire day of broadcasting, which was only like 2 hours.
Yes.
They only fired up the TV broadcaster for about 2 hours a day. And so there was really nothing to watch on TV in Albania, and so that was why Albanians set up these big TV aerials in order to reach across the Adriatic Sea and try and pick up stuff from Italy.
I read that there were some spots where you could only pick up Yugoslav or Greek television. So there's some like slight dialectical. If you lived in really specific places, then you didn't learn Italian, you learned Greek or something.
The other interesting thing that I learned that we didn't put in the episode, Hoxha himself and his government kind of felt like they needed to understand what was going on in the West.
Mm.
And so they set up a repeater.
Yeah.
Basically, it has an aerial that picks up a weak signal from somewhere far away and then it rebroadcasts that with an increased amount of power.
Mm.
And they were doing this for Italian television so that the government could monitor what was on Italian television in Tirana.
Interesting.
And so people in Tirana could pick up quite a strong signal of Italian television because Hoxha was trying to spy on Italy.
Wow.
Absolutely backfired, and eventually he ripped it down, but they kind of made it easier for the people to watch Italian TV for a little while.
Yeah, well, that was the environment that this was in. How do you think that people might have come across Norman Wisdom?
Well, was he on Italian TV?
No, he was on Albanian TV.
Oh.
He was one of the very, very rare Western things that for some reason Hoxha decided was let through the censors. There's a few different explanations for this. This is Norman's explanation.
Okay.
Well, in Albania, the dictator, Heksim, he wouldn't allow any films with bad language or sex, murders and car crashes and all that sort. And so all my films were allowed to go in there, all the lot of them.
We've got a clip of you,
have you?
In Albania. You didn't know this.
No.
Got a clip of you doing the wonderful work you do with the children.
Just a few months ago, these children all lived on the streets. Their surprise visitor shared the happiness and warmth of a hostel provided by Child Hope UK.
Oh, he's so sweet. Oh, okay. So, first of all, he obviously doesn't know the name of the dictator.
Yeah.
That's quite funny. Basically, he was so bland and vanilla that Heksim was happy to have him on.
Well, that is his explanation. A lot of other people say it's something different. So, Bill Hamilton, who was a BBC correspondent, he was one of the first people let back into Albania when it opened up in the 90s. He says that it was because Hoxha saw a communist parable, that it was this downtrodden worker, and he was always fighting against this Mr. Grimshaw character. So it was probably that. It was probably that it's reasonably bland and non-offensive, and there is kind of this undercurrent of he's the underdog and he's always fighting aristocrats.
He's working class fighting against the aristocrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Some people said that it was played like weekly. Like it was played for 50 years.
Oh, fantastic.
Over and over and over again. And so generations and generations were exposed to this. And he just didn't have any way of knowing because it's not like they were paying him royalties or like reporting box office.
Mm.
He didn't know. And they were, you know, they were closed off. He just slowly got this massive following to the point that there was one Albanian source I looked at that said that Pitkin kind of became a word in the Albanian language where it meant like a clumsy fool, like a Muppet. You call someone a pig.
Like Mr. Bean, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. He kind of really embraced this. You saw him there with the children. He did a lot of charity work in Albania. And he even released a song which charted in Albania.
Of course he did.
He really just was like, these people love me. I'm going to love them back.
Okay, here's the song.
From Scutari to Carizza, from Circastra to Barat, from Bellona to Tirana, I'm really, where is that? From the mountains to the Adriatic shore, I give my all until they cry for more. I made my name in many places, a thousand calls, a thousand faces, but nowhere's more devoted than Albania. But they've got Norman mania. I may be way off track, but I love Albania back.
It's really catchy.
It is catchy.
I've had it stuck in my head.
Fantastic.
He like made this as part of a TV show, basically. This guy called Tony Hawks, not the skater,
okay,
was trying to. That would be amazing if it was Tony Hawk the skater.
Sorry, I just wish it was Tony Hawk. Inver Hoxha was like, yes, no, skateboarding is an acceptable communist pastime. We can have this silly clown man and skateboarding. Those are the forms of entertainment we allow in Albania.
Sadly, no.
Okay.
It was kind of a bet. He wanted to chart somewhere in the world. And so he was like, well, if I get Norman to record it, we could probably chart in Albania.
Brilliant.
And they did.
Of course they did.
And then they went on a tour.
In Albania, everybody loves Norman. It was like a scene for Take That, but with an 87-year-old man. It was extraordinary.
He got lost on at least two occasions, but always turned up. We just looked for a big crowd, and there he was.
And the little shepherds and all these fellas with donkeys up the hill would say, ah, Pitkini, Pitkini, ah, we love you, we love you. And he was getting kissed by men, kids, boys, girls, all sorts of people. They just loved him out there.
But they've got Norman Mania.
Love it.
He carried on the work with Albanian orphanages and children's charities for a long time, and he, like, retired on the Isle of Man eventually.
It's a shame that he didn't go and live on Cezanne Island, the island that Jared and Ivanka are trying to buy off the coast of Albania.
And then he died in 2010. There was big outpourings of support, and the Prime Minister, Berisha, sent a statement and said that the country was mourning.
Well, that's very sweet.
And that's the Norman Wisdom story.
I love that. It's fascinating because there's something about the exportability of that particular style of British comedy.
Totally.
I mean, Mr. Bean is the perfect example of this. Rowan Atkinson is famous in every country, basically.
Yeah.
He recently told a story on, you know, one of the British talk shows where he said when they made Mr. Bean and they started to syndicate it to other countries, he was happy for them to syndicate it to other countries, but not Italy. Do not syndicate it to Italy, because he wanted to go on holidays to Italy.
Oh, that's so funny.
And he didn't want to be recognised. And so throughout the 90s, he was mobbed in every country that he went to, except Italy, where he could have a perfectly normal holiday and nobody would know who he was. But then the Mr. Bean, the movie came out, the Bean movie, possibly slightly before your time.
No, I've seen it.
Oh, you have seen that?
I've seen every episode of Mr. Bean.
Of course.
Yeah.
We all have.
Yeah.
But basically the distribution company said, hang on, are you saying we can't put this out in Italy? That seems ridiculous. I'm sorry. And he eventually caved in and said, okay, fine, you can put the movie out in Italy. And now he's constantly recognized in Italy and he's really annoyed about it. But, you know, I'm sure Fawlty Towers has been syndicated all over the world, and a lot of these shows, the comedy is very universal.
I mean, that's part of the reason Chaplin was so massive, right? He was just everywhere because they didn't need to translate it to understand it. So he was in Soviet Russia and in China and everywhere.
Yes. There's a very interesting story of Norman Wisdom. It reminds me of the documentary that came out in 2012. It's called Searching for Sugar Man. Have you come across this? Yeah, of course, yes.
Incredible.
Incredible documentary about the incredible fame of the American musician Sixto Rodriguez in apartheid South Africa, and that he was not a particularly successful or popular musician in the United States, but wildly popular in South Africa. And it wasn't until, you know, the end of the apartheid boycotts and travel to and from South Africa increased that he sort of realized this incredible success that he'd had through bootlegged tapes being circulated through South Africa.
In Iran, apparently, Japanese and Korean dramas are massive because they won't play Western dramas. Like, there's this Korean drama series, I think it's called Jamong. It did so much better in Iran than it ever did in Korea. And this actor was so shocked, very similarly, that he just didn't know that any of this fame existed, that he got off the plane in Iran and was like a megastar.
Well, I mean, in our episode that we talked about the Iran nuclear deal that was struck under the Obama administration, we had the very strange scene of the Iranian delegation during the negotiations in Vienna just announcing one day, oh, yes, we're going off on a Sound of Music sing-along tour to Salzburg.
Yes.
And the Americans going, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, we love Sound of Music. Sound of Music is enormous in Iran. And we're like, oh, okay, have fun.
Incredible.
All right, Adair, thank you very much. What an interesting story.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday, not talking about Albania. We'll be talking about Nigel Farage. His by-election is coming up soon, and we're going to be having a look into the interesting characters that he surrounds himself with and that he gets his funding from. That's coming up on Thursday. See you then.